Welcome to Deception in the Last Days with your host, Randy Shelton. Randy is a member of the Biblical Discernment and Research Center. He has been studying cults and new religious movements for over 30 years. Join Randy as he discerns the deception going on now in the last days.
I like to review each week from last week's podcast, and so I want to look at some of the things we looked at last week. Now, we return to critiquing the article, The Coronavirus is Bringing a Plague of Dangerous Doomsday Predictions. And as part of the content that I shared, supplementing the article, that part of the article that I was critiquing, I quoted from J. Vernon McGee and his assessment of the last days, according to 2 Timothy chapter 3, and the last days of the church, as well as from the article that I was critiquing, Bad Doomsday Predictions, which, of course, we looked a lot of those when I segued and critiqued Sylvia Brown, the psychic, and her book in earlier podcasts. And then, of course, these bad doomsday predictions, from my perspective, of course, that have a bad effect on true Bible prophecy. And then, of course, we looked at the inaccuracies of Snopes, the fact-checking group, the liberal fact-checking group, which this liberal article from CNN recommends. In this particular case, Snopes might have actually got something right, or part of it right, or as they would say, it's not true or false, but a mixture. So they may have gotten a mixture right. I don't know. I wouldn't trust them at all, and I do not commend them to you at all. So that's why we took a swipe at them last week, but that was just in passing because it was part of the article I was critiquing. So we're going to carry on where we left off. This author, he states, many repeat the myths, and in case you would like that author's name, his name is John Blake from CNN, and this article is about 1 year old, but still relevant. It says, many repeat myths about Revelation. And, of course, there are a lot of myths about the book of Revelation. In fact, you'll find this author promoting people who are putting out myths about the book of Revelation. So, only he looks at it from a different perspective. You know, he looks at true Bible prophecy and true, correct looks, you know, interpretations of the book of Revelation. He looks at those as myths. But anyway, there's a lot to dig into here, and we will continue this series for some time until we can get through it. But we're going into some depth here. He says, if there was a prize for the most misunderstood source for bad predictions, it would go to the book of Revelation. And of course, I think there's probably some truth to that statement. But you know, God has given special blessing to those who study and read the book of Revelation. And I want to quote from the Word for Today Study Bible, in Revelation, in the introduction to the book of Revelation, chapter 1, John the Revelator writes, blessed is he who reads and those who hear the words of this prophecy and keeps those words which are written in it, for the time is come. And Chuck Smith has a comment here. He says, it's a built-in blessing. He says there are many people, even pastors, who avoid the book of Revelation. They say that it is a sealed book or that it is too complicated to understand. But Revelation is a very important book for us to understand. And God promises a blessing to those who study it. He says you will be blessed if you read it. You'll be blessed if you hear it. And most importantly, you'll be blessed if you keep the words of this book, obeying what God tells us to do. And of course, you know, if you follow what this author would say, you just reject the book of Revelation, or it really has no true valid meaning that God wants you to understand. But, you know, this man misinterprets and reinterprets Revelation and only looks at those who have knowingly misinterpreted for their own evil motives or what have you. But in other words, you'll walk away from this article saying, yeah, I'm not going to study that book, you know. Don't want to get one of those bad interpretations. But anyway, Chuck Smith goes on to say, and the time is near. This is a good time to read, hear, and keep this book. You will be blessed, God promises. So my intent, of course, is to encourage people to study Bible prophecy, There are many great Bible expositors, I believe, of Bible prophecy and this important 25 to 30% of the Bible that concerns Bible prophecy. Many good authors, and I will be quoting a few, I believe, today on the program. I'll have time for that. So his article goes on and says, people who have never read the Bible are familiar with its references. That's true. The four horsemen of the apocalypse, the red dragon, 666, and the seven bowls of plague. He says Revelation is filled with such contagious imagery that one theologian who has studied its text calls it a multimedia book whose popular images operate like an infectious disease. Well, that's nice. I would basically say that's, just more arrogant ramblings against the book of Revelation. And 1 Corinthians 2:14 says, the natural man receives not the things of the Spirit. And that's an example right there of that. And I want to quote actually from a book here, and I need to give a disclaimer before I do that. When I was in Bible college, our instructor, Dr. Belcher was his name, and in our theology class, he recommended a book to us, he recommended a book to us and said, this will be our textbook. And he says, but I want you to know that the author of this book no longer believes what he wrote in that book. But the book was so good and so true and so accurate at the time that he wrote it, that our teacher felt that it was certainly worthwhile to use as our textbook. But he gave us the disclaimer, he gave us the warning. So he was saying, stay away from Clark Pinnock, the man who wrote this book, Biblical Revelation, the Foundation of Christian Theology. And so I learned in Bible college a few things, and that was one of them I learned, is that sometimes people stray from the truth. Sometimes people do a good thing, and then they get to the place to where you can no longer recommend them, because they have strayed, and that is happening on steroids these days, so many who are going off the rails, so to speak. And so you have to be discerning, you have to be careful. And so I want to quote a quote from someone who I've always loved as a Bible prophecy teacher, but who I'm afraid has gone in some uncomfortable directions, and I'm not going to go into details on that. That's not the subject of tonight's study. I just want to give you that general principle and that general disclaimer that you can find good material from authors who've written good things in the past who need prayer now for the direction they may be going in. And so I need to say who that is, because I always want to give credit to an author in his book if I quote it. And this is Escape the Coming Night by David Jeremiah. Always has been a very good Bible prophecy teacher in the past, but as I say, I would just be careful for, I believe he lacks discernment in many other areas, unfortunately. So anyway, on page 20 of this book, Revelation is a misunderstood book. Of course, I say all this just to give you this little quote, but again, quoting that 1 Corinthians 2:14, he says, and I quoted it, the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit. He says, some are unbelieving. Some people, six attitudes. Some are unbelieving. They are spiritually undiscerning. Well, there you go. When the natural man picks up a book like Revelation and tries to read and understand it, there is no spiritual comprehension, because the natural man does not receive the things of the Spirit of God. Now, the people that we're going to be looking at, that this that the author of this article, Mr. Blake, the people he's recommending are apparently, or to me, pretty obviously natural men. They're studying, they research these things for a living. That's how he described it. I believe in last week's podcast, I quoted that quote. And, the natural man's not going to understand. He's going to have to explain away, misinterpret, redefine, and everything else. So that's the reason why I'm critiquing the article, because it's relevant concerning COVID and the other things that are happening these days. So moving on, this is, let's see, back to the article. It says Beale, and he's quoting this gentleman, Beale, who I've mentioned either in this podcast or last podcast, one of the guys that Timothy Beale, author of the Book of Revelation, a biography. Okay, thank you. I'm sorry. It was right there. Okay, now, Beale says many people quoting Revelation get the meaning and the symbolism wrong. Almost none of the people talking about Revelation have really sat down and read it, he says. And I said to myself, well, that sounds kind of arrogant. How does he know? How does he know? Almost none of the people talking about Revelation have really sat down and read it. Or there's those people who've read it and misinterpreted it and redefined it and basically turned on it and attacked it. So anyway, my question is, how does he know this? Is he like Sylvia Brown? Is he a psychic? And he knows that none of these people talking about Revelation have really sat down and read it. He says many people, for example, believe that the rapture, when it's believed that Jesus returns at the end of the age and all Christians dead and alive will rise up in the air to meet him, is in Revelation. Not true, says Beale. Well, now let's look at that statement. He goes on to say, there is no explicit mention of the rapture in Revelation. Okay, on the surface, that may sound pretty good. But let's just take a look at that. Now, I have study Bible of Spyros Zodiatis. And, of course, this is a Hebrew-Greek key study Bible. And on page 1546, commenting on Revelation chapter 4, verses 1 through 11, he says, in Revelation 2 and 3, in Revelation 2 through 3, we see Christ working on earth in his church. In the fourth chapter, of course, that's what he's dealing with here, chapter 4, verses 1 through 11. In the fourth chapter, however, we are transferred to the heavenly or spiritual realm. But how is it that the church is now found in heaven? Something must have intervened, thus bringing about this transfer of the earthly residents of the church to the heavenly one. This transfer is not mentioned in the book of Revelation, so that would seem to confirm what the other man was saying, but it is mentioned elsewhere, and the Bible should be viewed as a whole and not in fragments. One prophecy complements another. The event which describes this transfer is called the rapture of the church. But again, for a little more light, I told you I would be quoting some other sound men of God, excellent Bible expositors and Bible prophecy teachers. And one that I want to look at now, of course, and when he says, I wanted to mention this earlier, that I think it's called a red herring, you know, when somebody says something and it's meant to kind of lead you astray in a sophisticated kind of way, in a tricky way. I would say even if it is not in Revelation, it's in other scriptures, just as Spyros Zodiatis says in his Bible. But I would also say that the rapture is alluded to in Revelation 3:10, and as we'll see in this book that I mentioned, first book I want to recommend to you, and I've quoted him before, is Ron Rhodes' book, The Topical Handbook of Bible Prophecy. And on page 123, he says that the church is delivered out of the time of trouble. And of course, he's talking about the Great Tribulation, but he's quoting Revelation 3:10. Now, you can look it up for yourself, but the point is, he's describing the rapture, as I say, alluding to the event by the fact that church is delivered out of the time of trouble. So you can read that verse for yourself. We won't take the time. He goes on to say, the church is not mentioned in the long description of the Great Tribulation. He says, see Revelation 4 through 18. In other words, the church has been taken in the rapture because it's no longer mentioned through the long description in Revelation chapter 4 through 18. And to kind of reiterate that, Mark Hitchcock, another excellent author, in his book, 101 Answers to the Most Asked Questions About the End Times, he basically says the same type of thing. He says, the place of the church in Revelation. He says, none of the key New Testament passages that deal with the tribulation mention the presence of the church. The primary section of the Bible that describes the tribulation period is Revelation 4 through 19. In these chapters, there is a curious silence about the church. In Revelation 1 through 3, the church is specifically mentioned 19 times. It is again mentioned in Revelation 22 through 16, but between those two points, the Church of Jesus Christ is strangely absent from the biblical accounts of events on earth. To me, this is strong evidence that the church will not be present on earth during the tribulation. Of course, our point is to not just really get into the whole issue of the Great Tribulation and when and where and how and the timing, but to basically point out this man, I believe, is in error when he says the rapture's not in the book of Revelation. And I think, again, Spiros Zodiatis, he alluded to the same thing as I mentioned before. Now, let's read on in the article. he says that there are, let's see here, but Beale, again, this author. Oh, and by the way, let me just mention, while it's on my mind, Mark Hitchcock debated Hank Hanegraaff, who was a preterist, and that was online. I didn't get a chance to see if that's still out there and available, but you might want to look at that, you know, just to let you know. Down the road, we'll be looking at this belief and this teaching of preterism, but not now. We'll be doing that later. So I just want to mention that debate, Mark Hitchcock and Hank Hanegraaff. If you can find it, you might benefit from that. So Beale says the rapture theory actually originated in the 19th century work of a theologian named John Nelson Darby. All right, let's look into that statement, because you'll hear that oftentimes. Now, I want to look at the endorsement section on a book by Paul Wilkerson, which is published by the Berean Call Publishers, and the name of the book is Understanding Christian Zionism, formerly titled For Zion's Sake. And this is Charting Dispensationalism and the Role of John Nelson Darby. So Paul Wilkerson wrote this book, and these are some of the people who endorsed the book. and in a minute, well, in a few minutes, we'll look at an excerpt from the book in the Berean Call. But for now, I want to look at the endorsements and some of the comments about the book. Christian Zionism has been described by Hamas, you know, the terror organization, as the greatest danger to world truth, justice, and peace, and by the church as a powerful force that fuels the Arab-Israeli conflict and encourages the destruction of millions of people with its Armageddon theology. It has been denounced as pernicious, biblically untenable, anathema to the Christian faith, and one of the most dangerous and heretical movements in the world. How sustainable are these charges, and is there a case to answer? By locating Christian Zionism firmly within the evangelical tradition, Paul Wilkerson takes issue with those who have irresponsibly portrayed it as a totally unbiblical menace and as the roadmap to Armageddon. Charting in forensic detail its origins and historical development, he argues that Christian Zionism lays the biblical foundation for Israel's restoration and Christ's return. No one has contributed more to this cause than its leading architect and patron, John Nelson Darby, an uncompromising champion for Christ's glory and God's truth. This groundbreaking book debunks decades of misrepresentations, dissertation, and scholarship, exploding the myth that Darby stole the doctrine of the pre-tribulation rapture from his contemporaries. By revealing the man and his message, Paul Wilkerson vindicates Darby and spotlights the imminent return of the Lord Jesus Christ as the centerpiece of his theology. Now, here's some of the endorsements. Dave Hunt, one of my big heroes, he said, Wilkerson's impeccable documentation thoroughly refutes the myth that Darby got his doctrine of the pre-tribulation rapture from a Scottish girl and two Jesuit priests. I highly recommend this excellent treatment of a controversial subject that has confused many. And, of course, Dave's organization, the Berean Call, also highly recommends the book because they published it. And I have a copy, of course. Tim LaHaye also, in his endorsement, says, few dedicated Christian scholars have been attacked more unfairly than John Nelson Darby, including the man who wrote this article, this unbeliever, this natural man named Timothy Beale. So pray for Mr. Beale. This well-researched and readable book carefully sets the record straight and makes a valuable contribution to prophetic studies. Mark Hitchcock, who I quoted earlier, said Wilkerson's work is a breath of theological and historical fresh air. This work should quickly become a standard on Christian Zionism and Darby's influence on this important movement. And then, of course, Randall Price says, Dr. Wilkinson has restored Darby's reputation as a pious visionary who was used by God at a crucial time in history. For any student of ecclesiastical and political history, as well as systematic and historical theology, this book is essential reading. And by the way, I love all four of those guys that just endorsed this book. So, Understanding Christian Zionism. Now, before we look at some of the excerpts that are in the Brian Call from September 2013, I want to, because that way that'll give you a taste of what the book's all about in case you care to purchase it, of which I am not an agent, a salesman, or in the book business, but I like books. I like good books. I haven't had a chance to read this book. I've read the excerpts, the excerpts from the Brian Call, but I want to be honest and say I haven't read the book. But with endorsements like the people I just quoted, I think you should check it out. Anyway, so this is The Lost Honor of John Nelson Darby in Defense of the Faith from Friday, December the 1st, 2017, by Alf Sengia. And this this man who wrote this article, he says, in Darby's case, he's charged with borrowing pre-tribulationism from Margaret MacDonald. That's the Scottish girl that was mentioned. Moreover, he's accused of the sin of inventing spurious dispensationalism and infecting C.I. Schofield. As the story goes, the Schofield Study Bible became the scourge which influenced millions of American evangelicals. Pre-tribulationism and dispensationalism are often regarded as unbiblical, often heretical. Hence, Darby's character has been maligned by critics as a cheap way to refute these teachings. It's tiresome and almost pointless to repeat the same observations, but I will, he says. Margaret MacDonald's vision spoke of the church being tried by Antichrist. Not once did she write that Christians are raptured out before the tribulation. So, you know, Darby didn't get anything from her concerning the pre-tribulation rapture. He says, please send me a record of any statement where she does. He says, like Edward Irving, she was a historist who believed the world was in the last 3.5-year period before Christ's return. And I believe he means that a historist means that was her view of the book of Revelation. I may be incorrect. I didn't double check that, but I think that's probably what he means by a historicist. Darby formalized dispensationalism, yet Dr. William Watson, who wrote Dispensationalism before Darby, has shown that the seeds of dispensationalism and pre-tribulationism were planted long before him. Following the Reformation, many theologians began rethinking hermeneutics. This was the fertile ground which led to a plain sense understanding of prophecy, Israel, and the biblical covenants. It's also habitually asserted by Darby detractors that he promoted a different mode of salvation for Israel. Whenever I hear this, I ask for a citation. To date, I haven't received one. In fact, Darby wrote, of course, all the efficacious value for Israel then, as for us now, is in the blood of the Lamb. If Israel will have sacrifices as well as an earthly temple and priesthood, they will be only commemorative signs of the one great offering of Christ. Aside from these allegations, he's been accused of being contentious, intemperate, and a divider. He surely wasn't perfect and shouldn't be placed on a pedestal. No one ought to be. Paul Wilkinson recounts some of the controversies between Benjamin Newton, Samuel Tregelles, and Darby in his book, For Zion's Sake, which is, of course, the name has been changed now to the one that I mentioned earlier, Understanding Christian Zionism. And so there again, if you want to know more about Darby and you want to hear the other side about Darby, I recommend the book. Obviously, part of the problem was Darby's imminent rapture. Before we place the blame entirely on Darby, note the current animosity against pre-tribulation and its proponents. Has anything changed? There were personality conflicts, too. He says, Wilkinson points out that the fiery Darby was often self-effacing. He called himself a poor workman and no wise master builder, and confessed to a lack of courage, among other things. I wonder how many modern detractors would make such admissions about their own lives. Even so, Paul Wilkinson shows critics separated from Darby on the basis of his rapture teaching. That was the big deal. We ought to acknowledge some of Darby's lesser popularized achievement. Dr. Wilkinson has noted Darby left behind some 1,500 churches in Britain and the continent, also in the West Indies, New Zealand, and Australia. His legacy includes Bible translations in English, French, German, and an Italian translation of the New Testament. He also wrote many hymns, spiritual songs, and poems. John Darby wasn't perfect. Neither was he the man he's often demonized as. How many saints would come up smelling roses like roses following an intense scrutiny of their lives? I believe one day he will be vindicated. Those who'd like a more balanced view of his legacy with some warts, you know, see Dr. Wilkinson's book. Okay. Now, let's see how much time. We're going to jump right into this excerpt from Wilkinson's book and see how far we get. Christian Zionism is an umbrella term under which many Christians who support Israel have congregated. However, although there is a broad agreement among those who acknowledge God's prophetic purposes for Israel and who point to 1948 as the fulfillment of prophecy, there is considerable disagreement relating to the interpretation of those scriptures that speak of the rapture of the church, the identity and role of the Antichrist, the Great Tribulation, and the Second Coming. He says, I believe that Christian Zionism, properly defined, incorporates the following key elements: a clear biblical distinction between Israel and the church, the any-moment pre-tribulation rapture of the church, that's known as imminency, or the imminent return of Christ, the return of the Jews to the land, the rebuilding of the temple, the rise of the Antichrist, the seven-year period known as the Great Tribulation, the national salvation of the Jews, the return of Christ to Jerusalem, and the thousand-year reign of Christ on earth. In presenting this working definition, I have no wish to alienate any Christian friend of Israel. However, such a definition is necessary in order to dispel confusion, correct misunderstanding, and provide a sound biblical foundation on which to base that friendship and support. Consequently, I will on occasion quote from those who would not subscribe to my definition, but whose contributions I consider to be of value. Now, I am going to, I believe I'm going to close out for the day, and I believe, or actually the night, I believe I will begin this article again on our next podcast after our review.